welcome to Biz Culture Matters. We are back. It is after the holiday on the 29th of December. We're excited that you guys are back listening. I'm Zach Gander. Here I am with Steve Gander. Say hello, Steve.
Hey, guys. How are you doing? It's 7 in the morning. Are you awake yet? Have you had your coffee? I hope you are not going to do anything crazy between now and the new year.
There's probably some holiday hangover happening right about now, and I don't mean alcohol. I mean food and family. Everybody's probably resting up, eh?
Yeah, they are.
Steve, we're going into new year here. Anything special you got going on for the new year?
Well, what I'm looking forward to is a whole lot of exciting businesses that are serious about making good culture happen to get the good guys to win. Because at Excellent Cultures and on the Biz Culture Matters radio show, we're about helping the good guys win. And we've got two great guys on the air with us today, Craig Donaldson and Gio Gasparoni, who I know both of these guys' hearts because they've shared with us before their values and their insights. And we're going to hear their thoughts and help a lot of people really improve.
Yeah, we had a great time with them over the phone. Over one point, we had a Skype interview with Gio and Craig, and they were one of my favorites. I actually told Steve that we needed to have you guys on the show. We're glad you're here, Gio and Craig. Say hello to everybody.
Hi, hi there. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, we're glad to be here. We're happy to be here.
So, Craig, you're in Kansas City now, right?
Yes, I'm in Kansas City, and a couple of months ago, started with a company called DST Systems based in Kansas City, and am their head of ethics and compliance, which is a new position for this company.
And guy, listeners, the only thing we don't like about Craig is that he's a lawyer. But the thing that we love about Craig is he's a recovering lawyer. And the way you can find out that I'm not kidding about that, you want to visit the Excellent Cultures blog site at excellentcultures.com on the Culture News blog and read Craig's article on corporate ethics and Oz, and you will find that this guy is no lawyer's lawyer. So, Craig, we're glad to have you. Glad to have you on the show. You know, Gio, the last time I talked to you, or I think it was on email or Skype or someplace, and you were in Europe or working on some project with a company over there. Are you back?
I'm in Kansas myself.
we're sitting across the table together.
For the first time in months, we are sitting across the table. We are together in Kansas.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful.
Steve, I don't know if you knew this, but Gio's got some veterinary medicine past.
Yeah. No, I didn't. I knew he came, he ran a company as a CEO that was in that business, but I didn't know that he was involved in serious veterinary medicine.
This is how I started, but don't tell anybody.
Oh, okay.
Too late.
It's on the air, and it's on the internet. And once it gets on the internet, you can never get it up.
It's done.
So you guys are off to a bad start. You got a lawyer and a veterinarian.
Right? And this is a Biz Culture show. Yeah. What in the world's going on?
What a shock.
Well, Steve, go ahead. Let's get this started.
Well, Gio, why don't you start? You know, we already trashed Craig, and we'll help him recover in a second. But why don't you start? Give us a little background on your experience and your background as a CEO and a leader of businesses. And then, Craig, we want you to, you know, talk to us about your passion for ethics and values and, you know, why you're a recovering lawyer instead of a lawyer.
Fair enough.
Well, I can start with a little background. As you mentioned, I'm a vet, and I think there's a link between being a vet and understanding a human being, because we are dealing with animals that can't talk.
There you go. I mean, and our listeners at 7 a.m. on Saturday morning, they can identify with that feeling.
Exactly. So, and I've been a world traveler, as you pointed out. Indeed, we were Skyping when I was abroad, and I lived in Italy, in Belgium, and in the United States. And now I know more about baseball than soccer. So,
well, when I met you, you knew a lot about baseball, and you were running, you know, a great firm. And now you're out there helping lots of firms, not just keeping your talents locked up inside of one corporation.
That's correct. So I established about a year ago my own company, which is the name, you can relate to that. The name is Volare, like an old Dean Martin song. There was an Italian song.
Oh, yeah, I know it. We know it well.
That's a good song.
We can actually hum a few bars.
Volare. And the other one is Volare connecting, so connecting the dot, which I think is relevant for our conversation today. So my little experience with the company that helped the company growing exponentially in my last decade now is, you know, hopefully useful to other companies, small or large, to take those companies in a different way, whereby the culture is the skeleton, is the fundamental of the growth of those companies. And I happened to meet Craig, and that's how we came about with this article, because unfortunately, in the recent time, we are more concerned about doing things right than doing the right things, which we believe that those are the ones that will take the company to a different level.
Yeah. Well, we're going to want to hear some more about your experience with growing this,
sure,
you know, these companies to exponential growth shortly. Craig, tell us about what it's like to be a recovering lawyer.
Well, yeah, I actually went to law school a bit later in life, and prior to that had vowed I would never be a lawyer, and somehow I ended up there, and loved law school, and then practiced law at a large firm, which was a great experience, and it helps you think analytically and also a bit pessimistically and what have you, and for me, it was, I enjoyed the practice of law, but a lot of it was reaction, wanted to be more on the front end of things. And but I think in my position in terms of ethics and compliance, that law background has suited me very well. I think, too, the fact that I have business experience in terms of running some businesses is just critical. And then internationally, having lived overseas and dealt with businesses overseas, so when I look at my background and history, it just seems that, you know, it's perfectly positioned me for where I am today, and hopefully to really help affect positive change in this organization and kind of spread the message to whoever's willing to listen and help in any way that I can to make a difference.
Yeah, there you go. When listeners, when I first met Craig, Gio had emailed me an article that Craig had written called Corporate Ethics and Oz. You want to be sure and read it. It's on the Culture News blog at excellentcultures.com. But when I read Craig's article on how he kind of compared what's going on in today's corporate society with The Wizard of Oz and how it's one thing behind the curtain and another thing out in front of the curtain, and analyzed that and addressed it with some specific components, I said immediately, wow, this guy is no lawyer. This guy understands people. He understands people and he understands culture. Craig, can you give us a little background on, I mean, what was it that motivated you to write that great article?
You know, I think I have studied this stuff. I study people. I read a lot. I love to learn, and I think I was watching. I coached my kids quite a bit in sports, and I was always interested in what certain kids, something would happen, and they'd be very dejected and never bounce back, and other kids seemed to thrive when something didn't go their way, they bounced back even stronger. And so then you look at organizations, how do they become resilient and grit, and what's going on, and why are some successful and not? And so that just fascinates me. And I think it happened to be in a day period, I read an article about what was going on at the J.P. Morgan, and it just surprised me. After all, with the Enron and all the financial collapse, and you just saw, at least based on that one person's observations, you know, their discontent with the culture and the bad things that are happening, and then, you know, the next day, by happenstance, I came across this video of these, what I would call heroic integrity, courage, honesty, respect, this women's softball team. And I thought, what's the moral of those stories for corporations today? And kind of in the context of ethics and compliance, because ethics and compliance is maybe more than others tasked with, hey, how do you prevent the bad from happening? And I think government regulations and courts and what have you have helped create these ethics and compliance functions to say, hey, stem the fraud. How can you help us in an organization stop the wrongdoing or give people a chance to speak up about it in order to prevent it and what have you? So it was really, what's my thoughts, having in a two-day period come across these two very different stories.
Yeah, and it was a great article. And, Gio, I know your experience has been with leading, you know, good-sized, large, mid-sized to large organizations, lots of people, in not just compliance, but building cultures where ethics and values are lived instead of talked about, and performance is the way of the day. Because usually what people think is that, well, you can either do the right thing or you can make a lot of money. And your philosophy was you do the right thing and that makes a lot of money. Our listeners would love to hear how you came up with that one.
I think you touched it in different parts of why you're successful. First of all, lead by example and walk the talk. People are spotting right away when you don't mean it. It's just lip service. And that, I guess, was just the link that I had with Craig on thinking through what real matter in the organization. And money is important, but I think it should be a derivative. It should be the second thought. It can be the thought. You make money with the real assets of a company that are people. It's about the strategy. It's about organization. It's about motivating people to reach a certain goal. And with integrity. So do the right things. Is it perfect? It won't be perfect. But it's just the transparency, the communication, the fact that you have in a company a mission to accomplish. It's not to need an agenda or lobbying or politics. Of course, if you promote that type of things, you are spending already 50% of your time worried about your job instead of worrying about where the company can go. And I think we are discounting a lot the value of communicating and engaging people in the process of taking the organization to a different level.
Yeah, exactly. We're moving closer to a break, but after the break, we're going to ask Gio to share with us more of his philosophy on how he's been able to engage large organizations to, as he says it, you know, walk the talk and live the values as opposed to just talk about them. And I know that our listeners can hardly wait to hear your perspective, Gio, because the folks that listen to Biz Culture Matters believe that Biz Culture Matters.
And we're going into a break, and you're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM.
Remember Ross Perot, the Texas millionaire who ran for president in the early 90s? Did you realize that he's built multiple companies that sold for billions? Each of his companies held a strong values-based culture. We interviewed his CFO and COO. His insightful comments on the role of culture in business are posted on the Culture News blog at excellentcultures.com. Take a look. You'll gain wonderful insights to building your own excellent cultures on excellentcultures.com. You can also follow us at XLNTCultures or Facebook/Excellent Cultures.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at excellentcultures.com.
As an executive, CEO, or business owner, do you find yourself struggling with work-life balance and achieving your goals at work and home? Are you overwhelmed in your workload and feel important things aren't getting done? Our coaches specialize in helping leaders like you overcome challenges and build a plan to recenter their life, to achieve the balance and success you've always hoped for in your business and your personal life. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures about the right plan for you.
And And we're back on Biz Culture Matters on Clay 11 AM with Gio and Craig. Steve, lead us back into what you were leading us to hear from Gio.
Yeah, so Gio, before the break, you were talking to us about, you know, the fact that in a business, money is important because you're in business to make a profit, but that how you were able to lead businesses in a way that made a profit by doing the right thing, and it was about values and communication and motivating people and all great words that great leaders have always believed in. But we're looking for the secrets. I mean, what are the Gio secrets that you pulled off and believe in and can make a difference that maybe not anybody that talks about this stuff can do?
So, this is a very simple and complicated question at the same time. I don't know if I'm a hero or just a common person that listens to people and try to leave the importance of the communication throughout the organization. And if you promise something, stick to it. So it is not something that you have the magic wand and it happens. It's just a daily job. It takes a lot of time. And it's also simplifying the message. You need to have a very, you know, I used the four words and four bullets, but this is really it. And the other one is engaging. I had the honor and the pleasure to manage a global organization, so engaging people with different culture from different countries, it's respectfully, it's very important. And there is an enrichment in the organization when you start to pull together all these different pieces and a lot of miles in airline miles that you need to do, because you need to be truthful. Once you gain the trust of the people, then you can start delegating, because then the people will believe that you are real. But if you start having hidden agendas, if you start saying one thing and do another, then it's where the culture will be lost.
Yeah, we're going to...
When you lose the power of what you're doing, the actions.
Yeah, we're going to quote you on that one. Watch for it coming out on Twitter. Once you gain the trust of people in the organization, then you can start delegating. So, Gio, you know, obviously, you know, working for big companies and leading big companies, you've had situations where you made promises, but then something happened. The board didn't want to do it. The market changed. There was a legal problem. How do you deal with the promise that you make that it becomes obvious that you can't keep? Now, anybody that's involved in local, state, or federal politics, you really need to listen to this one, because Gio's going to give you the right answer that works instead of the shortcut.
There is nothing wrong in being wrong.
Can you publish that for our political leaders?
I don't know. It comes like this, and I didn't have my scotch yet.
There's nothing wrong in being wrong at 7 o'clock in the morning and you didn't have your scotch yet.
No.
It's a recorded show, folks.
But guys, it's the honesty. It doesn't mean that you need to be perfect. People understand. I think we are grossly discounted the value, intellectual capability of the organization at any different level. If we start engaging them in different level, we will take the company and we won't be perfect. We won't be right 100% of the time, but yet it will go in the right trajectory.
Yeah. Yeah, very well said. So, Craig, you're a compliance guy. As an attorney, you spend a lot of time with, you know, ethics and compliance. Where have you seen good cultures of ethics, values, and employee engagement start to deteriorate? What are the trouble signs, and how do you avoid them?
Yeah, well, I think whatever I'm answering here would very much concur with what I heard Gio say. What I heard him say at the highest level is we need to value people. And you do that by building trust and engaging, getting them acting like owners and feeling like owners. That the quote about nothing, you know, there's nothing wrong with being wrong. How do we deal with mistakes and when we mess up and when we're wrong? Do we own it and look at it as a system error and fix it and move on and it's a lesson learned? Or do we create a culture of fear where people don't want to speak up? So I think when you don't listen to Gio's advice and you start trying to control people rather than valuing them, you lack trust and you deal with being wrong by kind of a blame type culture, which then creates fear and a sense of the raised nail gets hit. So, you know, hunker down. You're going to have people taking shortcuts. People aren't going to be quick to speak up, and they don't feel like owners. And there's a difference between renting and owning, and you want people feeling like it's my business and I have a vested interest. And so I think kind of what I the tone at the top is critical. You know, if your tone at the very top is not what it should be, then you're pushing a boulder uphill in terms of trying to have a certain culture about an organization. I think engagement is critical. We've talked about that. And I think collaboration is critical, that different parts of the company are aware of what's going on. There's a sense of sharing best practices and, hey, where there may be some obstacles and sharing learnings. If you have an organization where there's a great tone at the top, where employees feel engaged and there's a real sense of collaboration across functions and business units, I think you're much more likely to be successful from an ethics and compliance front. And also much more likely, I think, to be successful on the business front, on the revenue front.
So, either one of you, what do you do when you believe all these things and you just happen to be working for a leader or in an environment or under authorities that are really good at acting differently behind the curtain like the Wizard of Oz was, and just kind of head nod and smile and, yeah, great, all of this transparency and communication stuff, go ahead, I'm busy. How do you deal with that?
Well, Gio's looking at me, and I'm looking at him.
It is tough. It is tough because you start from the top. I guess your question is more, how can you change that? I had the same question today, actually.
Really? Well, so tell us how. How do you change it?
So if somebody that you describe doesn't seem to be valuing this, then it depends which level of the company is in.
Uh-huh.
I mean, if this is a CEO, we are in trouble because most likely the board is the same.
Uh-huh.
If you have a CEO that the culture is himself rather than how many people he can serve, then you are in trouble. If you are as part of the senior managers and you have that kind of character, you hope on the peer pressure. Usually people at that level are pretty competitive. So if you see that coming from another angle, another peer can get more success or pushing people to a different level or the company to a different level, that may be convincing. And there are certain people that they should be individual contributor. You shouldn't belong to an organization.
Yeah, Gio, we've decided that the title of your book is going to be There's Nothing Wrong with Being Wrong, you know, and that chapter one is going to be, you know, just what you said. You know, if you've got a CEO who doesn't believe this, you're really in trouble. You're really in trouble because...
But Steve, think about where we are today. Look at the newspaper. I'm bewildered, and it really goes back to our article about doing things right or doing the right things. Today we have an HP communicating 2 days ago that they have an $8.8 billion write-off after an acquisition of a $10 billion a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they were audited by KPMG, Deloitte & Touche. Mm-hmm. Tell me, which world is this?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Interesting that you mentioned that. We, one of the leaders that we interviewed on our blog series, listeners, you can get this. The article is called Culture is a Railroad at theexcellentcultures.com, culture news blog, right next to Craig's article on corporate culture and Oz. But we interviewed a gentleman by the name of Russell Freeman. Russell is Ross Perot's chief operating officer. And what Russell told us, and we can't say it all on the air,
sure,
because much of it is confidential, but that in his career with Ross Perot, it was always about doing the right thing first. And they proved the economic value of that by the companies that they built and sold. So, for example, the first one was The first company that Ross Perot built under those values was Electronic Data Systems, EDS, was sold to General Motors, and then for billions, and then they paid Ross more billions to get him off the board because his outspoken nature of not putting up with all of the political stuff and chicanery that was taking place was offensive. But today there was a Wall Street news analyst that wrote an article not too long ago about the value of what then was EDS, and all they sold, I mean, they sold everything. All they removed was the top leadership, who in fact was the culture, and that, you know, the company that sold Lock, Stock, and Bolt for billions of dollars was now a division of HP, and they were going to shut it down because it was valueless. They did another assessment on the second company that they built and sold, Perot Systems, to Dell Computer. And nobody knows the value because, in fact, Dell is traded publicly, but they sold it for $30 a share, and estimates now are considerably less than that. But what was removed was the culture of values and ethics in the senior leadership, and then once it's gone and everything else is left, the economic value just diminishes immensely.
This is Craig. Ironically enough, I've connected with some people that used to be in EDS to find out about their values and culture and what have you, and because I know it was successful and very important to them, so I wanted to learn more about how they did things and why they did it. And it was critical to their success. They the guys that were in the organization and part of it and steering it, you talked to them. They knew what was important, and they knew what was okay and what was not okay. And somebody told me they had been in the organization 20 some plus years and changed jobs a lot. And I think I said, why did you stay so long? And he said, because I always felt like I always felt like I was growing professionally, but just as much personally, that they cared about me as a person. And he gave a few examples of how the organization showed that, some very tangible, poignant examples. And you can understand why it was successful. It was clear what was important to them, it was clear where they was going, and they valued people, and they built trust.
Yeah, very well said. We're going to go to a short break and hear from our sponsors, but when we get back, Craig, we're going to want you to give us a little more information on some of the learnings that you got from the former EDS leaders around culture and ethics and values. We'll be right back.
Good stuff, guys. You're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay, 1180 AM. We'll be right back.
ExcellentCultures.com is always interviewing leaders committed to cultural leadership, excellence, and change. These leaders, like Russell Freeman, Ross Perot's COO, and Bob Hinton, CPA and Moss Adams Managing Partner, have world-class ideas. As advocates for creating a strong corporate culture that builds people and serves customers with excellence, they share breakthrough business ideas. Gain insights from Russell, Bob, and others on the Culture News blog at ExcellentCultures.com.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at excellentcultures.com.
Has business taken over your life? Are you living to work or working to live? Stress, broken marriages, neglected relationships, and poor health are symptoms of a life out of balance. The right coaching plan can have transformational impact on the quality of your performance at work, depth of relationships at home, and personal sense of well-being. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures how coaching can help you maximize your life and optimize your work. Stop struggling to survive. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures how coaching can help you maximize your life and optimize your work.
Thank you.
And you were back on Clay 1180 AM. This is Biz Culture Matters. I'm Zach. Steve is on the line with Gio and Craig. You guys, if you've been listening already, can tell why we wanted to have these guys on the show. This is some good stuff. Head back into it, Steve.
So, Craig, you were telling us before the break about your experience with former leaders of Ross Perot's first company that he sold to GM and now I think belongs to HP, and the feedback that they gave you on the culture of values and ethics and how it integrated throughout the company. Tell us a little bit more about what you learned there.
Yeah, and again, it's informal. You know, I was just very curious about, you know, because the way these guys talked was a bit different. They said, we were with EDS, and kind of tell me about that and the training and your values, because it's clear those are important to you. And you know, and you know, I think the way it was described to me was and EDS has a long history and been sold a couple times. Like you said, I think to GM and then to HP. But at some point in time, they asked themselves, are we positioned for success in the 21st century? Are we even going to be relevant a few years from now? And I got the sense around the table, they said, maybe not. What do we need to do? And they said, well, we need to look at our leadership. And they started looking at their leadership and defining what's important. They started putting a lot of resources it was almost a self-exploratory. How can we remain relevant? What's important to us? And getting help. Who are thought leaders? Who are doing things well? Let's not go this road alone, but let's bring in some of the best and brightest to help us with this, and dedicate and look at internal resources we have in the organization, and people that, and put teams together to attack some of these issues that we think are very, very big issues in terms of learning and training and retaining people. And so, but I got the sense at the various highest level is we have to have a set of core values that guide us. Those are the Northern Star, that without that, we're all going to kind of be going in different directions and we're not playing off the same playbook. So they knew what the values were, and they expected everybody to live them, and they wanted their business people to teach them. They didn't want some, you know, hired professor that kind of theoretically understood these things to share them. They wanted people that had experienced things in the marketplace and their own business people to come back and train others with real life stories, real life examples, and a sense of, hey, I was in the foxhole too, so I know what it's like. Here's how we do things, but. They they came up with a consistent approach to, hey, how do we ingrain it? How do you help change an organization to go from point A to point Z on a cultural basis to remain vibrant and set up for success? But it was very strategic. It's very intentional. They put resources behind it, and I think at least the feedback I got from them was, this was the most important thing to the top management. They sponsored it. They drove it. They believed it. They lived it. They went through it. And so you had that even more than buy-in at the top. They were directing it. And you can see when they talk about it how important it was to them. And I want to say the fond memories. You can tell this in some of the stories they tell you. You sense, that organization really did care about people because however many years later, they just talk very fondly of it, and they remember those things. It's funny when you get some of those guys together, they talk war stories in a certain language and certain things because they shared a very unique experience that had a profound impact on them. Again, not only professionally, but I think very personally.
Yeah, very well said. Yeah, so Gio, this question is for you. You know, you're the guy that's led large organizations, and there's tons of information out on the web about entrepreneurial companies that start up, and the mantra is hire people that have your values, because you're not going to be able to change them if you don't hire the people that have your values. And, I mean, what do you do when you have 5 or 6 or 8 or 10,000 people who have been working for the firm for a long time and the business is successful, and you decide that the values that you have are not necessarily consistent with those that, you know, the people that you have hold, do you just fire everybody and start over again?
This is a tough one. To me, you need to go back to some logic and basic stuff. First of all, is where the company needs to go in the next 5 years. Maybe, you know, a few years ago we were talking about 10. It seems to me that at the speed at which the technology has changed, maybe 3 to 5 is more reasonable. Then you need to design the boxes. So the organizational structure that you need to have with a description of the people that need to fill that box. What are the characteristics that goes in that box? And then you need to look at the talent pool that you have. That's why I really believe in senior management working very close with a strategic HR. If HR is tactical, we have a problem in the company.
Yeah. Yeah, very well said. So tell our listeners, what's the difference between, give us some examples of the difference between a tactical HR and a strategic HR.
Well, a tactical HR would be the one that makes sure that we have the evaluation at the end of the year of every employee, sign the form, and that we are in compliance with the ruling within the organization to have all the goals written and signed off by the manager. That would be one.
Okay.
And indefinitely, they will lose it anyhow, but that's okay.
Okay.
The strategic is that HR needs to look at the talent pool in the organization. And there is nothing wrong in seeing a shift in the need of an organization. I use the analogy, the box has shifted up or down. The mistake the company makes is to associate that box with the person, and we shouldn't do this. We need to analyze whether or not the box has moved and in the org chart, what I mean, the need for the company in that specific area, and the person that was there is the one that can grow or can move up with the box or needs to stay. And then we need to understand what the needs are of the company and see if there is a place.
Exactly. Exactly.
See, one of the issues that we kill the culture of in the North America, we become self-centered, is when we start talking about we will make you employable. That, to me, is the worst that we could have done in an organization. Because if you dissociated the trust in an organization, the willingness of the people to make the difference in your organization, and the commitment to that goal and to that organization, you're losing half of the traction of that person.
Hey, and this is Craig. I just wanted to go back in terms of when the earlier question about if you're in an organization and there's a bunch of people that don't hold those values, you know, what do? You fire them? You know, I think too, part of the question we have to ask here is, where's the organization? And is the organization changing and changing values? Because, and how have we incentivized people in terms of values and what have you? So I think an organization always needs to look first at itself to say, have we somehow incentivized this? Did we somehow create this? And now we're coming to a realization and we want to change. So that to a large part, the organization owns that responsibility of the people behaving the way you've encouraged them to behave, or by having your head in the sand, allowed people to behave. And so if an organization is now coming to enlightenment or what have you, saying, gosh, we all of a sudden need to do this, this, and this, people can change. But again, it needs to be a consistent training, tools, modeling, coaching, you know, all hands on board, let's make this happen to drive change in an organization. Because then after you've made all those efforts, if some people decide they don't want to be on board, then it's probably best for the organization and for that person's well-being too.
Right.
Hey, there's probably a place more suitable somewhere else that's in your interest and our interest. But I think organizations really need to look at themselves, because, you know, a lot of times we all change the rules midstream. and when you change the rules, what's the responsibility to ensure, all right, let's give our people time to adjust to that and to make sure that they're successful in adopting these values and that they understand it's a clear, consistent set of values and messages and principles of conduct and what have you. And we want to invest the training and that tone at the top to ensure that it's cascaded down and permeates the organization and allow people time to change, to adjust, to adapt.
Yeah, that's excellent, Craig. So we've got about 2 minutes and 30 seconds left. Craig and Gio, tell us, I mean, what's your advice to businesses and corporations today about how do you build a culture of ethics, values, and employee engagement, and how do you maintain it? You know, what's your advice? What should they do?
I'm looking at Gio again.
I think you start from the top. I think just to close on the prior comment, if you have on the top a silo type of culture, that it's already the first sign that something is wrong in the organization. So you need to start from there. You need to have a few things. If you really need to change a company because he's on the left side and he's going on the right side, then you need to start measuring the right things. I think in the last time we talked about one of the issues that we have in a corporation, we measure the wrong things. So, and it's difficult because people have this schizophrenic approach. You're telling me to go left, but you measure everything that is on the right. So what do you mean? And so we need to measure a few things that are more relevant. And in the bottom line, you need to smile and apologize if there was something wrong, but engage people and be transparent and honest with them because people will see through.
Yes.
And in general, people want to stay in an organization for life. There are a few examples of people that want to hop out and they want to move from one organization to another. But if you are satisfied with the growth in terms of personal and professional, there's no point in changing.
Yeah, very.
I think too, that question about building culture and maintaining it depends, you know, who's the audience. So if I'm trying to influence a CEO who's skeptical, you know, the argument I would make is a strong culture of well-being and engagement is going to drive your revenue. You know, it's a competitive advantage that, you know, if people are your best asset. You want people speaking up and sharing thoughts and ideas. They're only going to do that if they feel safe and valued and feel like an owner. So for a CEO, I may make that presentation or argument. For somebody in an organization doing their job, how do you build culture? You're working on the assembly line or you're doing something. I say, look, what do you want and what are you going to do today to help create that? How are you going to be the difference that you want to make? And find others you can align with to help build thinking. How can you ask questions of the organization to carefully and subtly challenge the status quo in a positive way? And how to look at adding value by your questions, by your behavior. But in this organization, I've seen just all kinds of employees at various levels saying, I want to make a difference. Well, what does that mean? That means, hey, I'm going to smile. I'm going to bake cookies and bring them in. I'm going to ask people what's important to them. I'm going to say, do you want to go to lunch? I'm going to say, what's important to us to succeed here? What do we need to do? I'm going to ask that question. I'm going to be bold and be a leader, not just a follower, and help create where I think we need to go. And I'm going to bring people alongside. I'm going to be very collaborative. And valuing in that.
Yeah, great stuff. Great comments.
We're heading into a break, guys, our last and final break. Catch our next segment here, our last segment coming up on Biz Culture Matters here on Clay 1180 right after the break.
Remember Ross Perot, the Texas millionaire who ran for president in the early 90s? Did you realize that he's built multiple companies that sold for billions? Each of his companies held a strong values-based culture. We interviewed his CFO and COO. His insightful comments on the role of culture in business are posted on the Culture News blog at excellentcultures.com. Take a look. You'll gain wonderful insights to building your own excellent cultures on excellentcultures.com. You can also follow us at XLNT Cultures or Facebook/Excellent Cultures.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at excellentcultures.com.
As an executive, CEO, or business owner, do you find yourself struggling with work-life balance and achieving your goals at work and home? Are you overwhelmed in your workload and feel important things aren't getting done? Our coaches specialize in helping leaders like you overcome challenges and build a plan to recenter their life, to achieve the balance and success you've always hoped for in your business and your personal life. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures about the right plan for you.
And we're back with Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM. Steve Gandra, myself, Zach, Gio, and Craig on the line. This has been some pretty good stuff for an ex-veterinarian and a recovering lawyer, guys. I gotta admit.
Ex-veterinarian, CEO, and active ethics and compliance lawyer. So I want to go back to a second to the comments that you both made in the last segment that I thought were so valuable. I had the opportunity to attend a large gathering of a local university here in the Seattle area last year, and the speaker was David Brooks, who is a New York Times columnist. And he said something that was just very, very interesting that I think related very specifically, Craig, to your comments as well as to Gio's in the last segment. He said that, in his opinion, based on all of the surveys and studies and data that he gathers from, youth and adults and politics and business and economy and everything else, that, in his opinion, the biggest problem that we had in America today was narcissism, selfishness. where his assessment of where it came from was that in the 50s, Dr. Benjamin Spock told us that our children were devoid of self-esteem and that we needed to do everything we could to raise the self-esteem of our children. So for the next 60 years, all of the major psychological studies, the employee empowerment programs, the corporate training, the university and pre and post-grad or content and programs were about building the self-esteem. And in elementary schools, we went to situations where everybody on the team gets a trophy, whether they earned it or not. And his view is that what's caused this epidemic of narcissism that's just strangling our performance in our society and our creativity, and especially our next generation of younger people, is because we overdosed on self-esteem. And that self-esteem has become narcissism, and that the anecdote to self-esteem is what John F. Kennedy told us in the 60s, ask not what your country can do for you, but ask what you can do for your country. And until we can go back to a culture of service that is looking for what can we do for others instead of what can you do for us, we're going to be stuck. Weigh in on that one, would you guys?
Yeah. That's exactly the point. And unfortunately, the self-esteem morphed into self. So now is, like we used to say in Latin, mors tua vita mea, so you die and I live. And that is the issue. And the other one is serving. And that reminds me of something that happened when I was promoted, the EVP of the company. I was in Asia, and the guy, a very senior executive of a company in Thailand, was asking me, what is your new job implies? And my answer, I was thinking about, well, for me, nothing has changed, but my answer to him was, I will serve more people.
And how did he respond?
Well, for an Asian person, he was really impressed, because the culture of being high in the organization is really to serve more people, and I meant it. And it goes to your point. I think that's what we are missing. We are missing the fact that there is nothing wrong in having a certain self-esteem. Of course, we want to be positive human being, but this is not at the expenses of others.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting observation. And what I would have said, kind of a lot of times, what I'm viewing, and Gio and I were talking about this earlier, is there just seems to be a culture in general you see of what I would call self-preservation, and maybe taking it to a further degree, you'd call it narcissism. And that's interesting in terms of how in infrastructure and institutionally from the 50s, that argument is that it's been, you know, started back in the 50s and been carried out. You know, I think when we talked about trust and valuing earlier, you know, at the heart of it all, other people matter. Other people matter, and we need each other to succeed. And that, how do we collectively work together in teams, break down hierarchy, and realize at our most base level we share the same emotions and desires and happiness and sadness and life events. We're collectively all in the same boat, and sometimes within an organization, because of ranks and titles and salaries, we forget that. And sometimes I think culturally I'm bombarded on TV how important I am by all these companies trying to sell me something that will make me happy and content. And I think great leaders give. Great leaders give more than they take. That's and that's why they're successful and people are drawn to them. You know, if you go back to great companies and why people stay, because they felt like they got more from it, and they probably felt like they were provided an opportunity to continue to give. And I do believe we feel better giving. And so how do we start to capitalize on, you know, on that? Because that's what's going to build people feeling valued and trust and engagement when we give to them and empower them to continue to give and allow those opportunities to happen.
So as you look to this culture of service instead of, as let's say, dramatically opposed to a culture of self, a culture of what can I do to serve you as opposed to what can you do for me? Gio, in your experience of working with you know, large organizations and leading large organizations, can you give our listeners a couple of tips or pointers of how you were able to live out that, you know, I'm here to serve more people, as opposed to just talk about it?
I had different examples that happened to me. I think as a general rule, you really need to be engaged. You really, and I know that sometimes it's tough because you travel, you're tired, and when you arrive, they take you to see customers, and one after the other, but this is what makes a difference, because it makes you credible. And the other part, you need to be there when they need. And it happened to me when I was in my military service. And it happened to me many times in the company. It can be not necessarily just linked to the company. It can be something related to their family. It can be some obstacle that they came. You need to be there for them. That is, I know, I try to be very simple, but those are the things that really left a sign in the people in being credible. You're not there just for collecting.
I think, too, let me just add on that. You know, as you move up in an organization, you know, you get that rank and that title, and you have that hierarchy, and it's easy to push things down and to delegate and to tell people, hey, I'm the vice president and you're a director. Please do X, Y, and Z, and here's what's important to the company. Please go execute this. And there's a top-down mentality of here's what we expect from you and need from you. I think we need, at the higher levels of the organization, ask the question downward, what's important to you? What would success look like for you? What do you need from me? Because I'm going to ask things of you that I want you to do, but I need to make sure that what you need from me and what success is for you, that we take that into account and try to make that happen.
Yeah, those are great questions, Craig. I don't know if anybody got them, but we're going to make sure and get them. Can you repeat those one more time, the three questions that you asked from the top down?
Yeah, from a higher level, asking a subordinate or a lower level, call it whatever you want, but asking downward, what's important to you? In your job and in your role, what would success look like? What are your personal goals and professional goals? And what do you need from me?
So simple, yet so very deep and so very well done. We've got about 2 minutes left to wrap up the show. Gio, can you give us any specific examples on how you were able to interface and ask questions like that and the results you got in some of your career in leading large organizations?
I think I have a good example. So every time, because of my memory, so keep seeing things very simple. I was asking everybody that I was going around, I was doing two things. Basically, I was asking, how important is your job? So what are you doing that is linked to the goal of the company? So basically setting the contest. Just making sure that if he doesn't know, I was talking to the manager or the manager, the manager's manager, just to make sure that the contest was set properly throughout the organization. And in time of transition, reaching out and ask, what do you like in this company? What do you think is good for the company? For you and the company, and tell me two things that you would improve.
Very simple, very right on. Tell me two things that you can improve. Wonderful time today with Gio and with Craig. Be sure and visit excellentcultures.com and read Craig's blog article on the Culture News blog on corporate ethics and Oz. Make sure that you listen in and on the podcast to reinforce these concepts and principles with those that you work with, because they're great content from two wonderful contributors. Guys, thank you so much for being on our show today. You've added tremendous value and have great insights.
Thanks for having us. Anytime.
Glad you have. All right. You've been listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180. Remember, listeners, excellentcultures.com. Great articles there by Gio and Craig. You could follow us on Twitter at @XLNTcultures. And get online. Fill out a daily culture assessment. You can get some free coaching and some free culture assessment right there on our website. Let me leave you with this thought today. All of this culture talk goes into trying something new in your company. And often we are scared to change the culture because we're afraid to try something new. Never be afraid to try something new. Remember, amateurs built the Ark, professionals built the Titanic. Thanks for turning in. Listen, hear you. Man, I'm closing bad. It's time to go, guys. It's time to go. We'll see you next Saturday at 7 a.m. Biz Culture Matters, Clay 1180.